Welcome to the Whiskey and Wisdom Podcast, coming to you from the Cargo District Recording Studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, where we discuss the most fascinating topics of life. I'm Tyler Yaw with my co-host, Chris Kelly, and each week we interview a special guest to learn how they acquired their wisdom over a glass of whiskey. So sit back, pour yourself a glass, and enjoy Whiskey and Wisdom.
Welcome back to the Whiskey and Wisdom Podcast. It's your constant co-host, Chris Kellum, and
Tyler Yaw.
This week, we bring on our special guest,
Amy.
And Andy.
Thank you so much for coming on, Amy and Andy. And we are inside of Hidden Ships this week in Surf City, North Carolina.
Yep.
So gracious to let us come in and take over a small section of the tasting room in here. So I appreciate that a lot. Thank you.
Great to have you.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I will say this is probably top three prettiest.
Hey, we'll take top three.
Well, thank you.
He just doesn't like to put an actual order. When he says top three, you could be number one. He just doesn't want to offend the other two.
You got to keep relations going.
Yeah.
So you got to balance it.
I understand.
And this week, because we're up here, Hidden Ships is a distillery with a bar attached to it. So please come in and check it out. We got a plethora of beverages. Me and Tyler are trying just the traditional Hidden Ships whiskey, I guess.
Bourbon.
Okay. Whiskey.
Yep. See, you want? I'm going to ask you that later.
Deal.
We'll get into it.
And then Tyler has an Old Fashioned, super
classic. As always.
What are you drinking, Miss Amy?
I have a Manhattan, also
very
classic.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes. And then what about you, boss?
We are both drinking Irish Maids, which is our cocktail of the month. It's not normally on the menu, or not the kind of core menu, but it's on the menu for this month only.
See, I was told to say you should put it on continuously.
I've heard that.
I know. Yeah. It's popular.
It's probably been our most popular cocktail of the month.
I thought February was going to be the most popular.
February was popular, but this one
is
yeah, we might keep it. We have all the other ingredients normally, except for the cucumber, so we just have to maintain cucumber.
Yeah,
right. That's not too bad then, I guess.
Before we get super crazy, what is in this Irish made?
Yeah, so
it's like a traditional,
a little bit different. I think I would still call it classically made, and we'll talk about our cocktail menu, I'm sure. You know, for us, it's important. All of our cocktails are kind of classically made, as I would call it. But for this one, it features our bourbon. So we have that in there. We have, you know, house-made lemon, house-made simple syrup, and then just a quarter ounce of Saint Germain, the elderflower liqueur. So that kind of gives it a freshness. And then we do muddle cucumbers in there, which really freshens it up. And so it's a drink that really reminds us that it's becoming springtime.
Yeah.
Yes. I pick with Tyler all the time because I like drinks that go with the seasons, and this is 100% springtime.
Yeah.
The muddled cucumber is really fun, and it has been popular, so we might have to keep it on.
They have to.
It is very refreshing.
Yeah.
So on a very nice, like, hot day, you can easily drink one of those out, like, on the patio that you have out here.
Yes, for sure.
So tell us a little bit about the backstory of how you all got started and how you kind of ended up where you are now.
Yeah, so our origin story starts with a great experience. That's what I love telling people.
Yeah.
So it was early 2019. Amy and I were visiting actually her sister up near Charlotte, and they took us to a craft distillery called Murto's Made. If you're ever up there in Huntersville, recommend it. But that's really where our story started, and we just had a great experience. They're a little bit more speakeasy, but they have a similar business model in so much as back-of-house distillery, front-of-house cocktail bar. And for Amy and I, we just had, again, great experience. We had these smoked Old Fashions that were brought out, presented to us. And at that point in my life, for probably the 10 years leading up to it, every time I would see a brewery open, I would look at it and say, damn it, I should have done that.
Yeah.
Could have done that. Would have, should have, could have. And that's not to take away from their skills, obviously, but that was just kind of my mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And then had this great experience and started to look at craft distilling as an industry. And the assessment I made at that time was I really think craft distilling is where craft breweries were maybe 10 or 15 years ago. Not to say it's saturated everywhere, but just in terms of popularity, you don't see as many craft distilleries as you do craft breweries. So decided to jump in the industry as much as I could. At that time, started a program at University of Louisville. Of course, Louisville is the heart of bourbon country up there in Kentucky. And so that school actually offers a graduate program in distilled spirits.
Oh, wow.
So did that program all online. Nothing hands-on, obviously, but a great foundation in kind of certainly legal issues, regulatory issues, marketing, branding, but also history you know, I was a history undergrad, so I really, you know, nerded out on the history of distilled spirits and cocktails. Mm. So enjoyed that program, finished it up in 2021. That's the same time that I was getting ready to retire from the Marine Corps. So I played Marine for 21 years.
Oh, wow.
2000 to 2021. Retired in 21, right at the same time as I was finishing that grad program. And Amy and I actually then spent a year traveling the U.S. in an RV.
Oh, awesome.
Four kids and a dog. we made it. We're all still alive. We made it back. But on that trip, what was funny is we left North Carolina and went right to the Bourbon Trail. Mm. Did about 10, 11 days there. Though for us, we got to call that research.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, we spent time doing the tours at the larger distilleries, but also some of the craft distilleries, because that's what we were interested in. And that definitely was now starting to build the foundation of, you know, what we saw there certainly inspired what it is we're trying to do here at Hidden Ships. And so finished the year RVing full time. Probably about halfway through that trip, we made what I call the first investment in our company, which was for Amy and I to attend Moonshine University.
Nice.
Funny sounding name, but very legitimate curriculum, again, back in Louisville, Kentucky. And so that was a 6-day hands-on distiller's course that Amy and I both attended in May of 2022. Mm. You know, you can't learn it all in 6 days, obviously, but again, it was more regulatory issues, a lot more marketing, a lot more branding, but it was hands-on as well.
We had a lot of sensory training with that.
Sensory training, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was okay. Great.
Wait, again, what's sensory training?
Like, what is it or what specifically? Just, you want to cover it? Go ahead.
No.
You brought it up, so you got
to say, yeah.
It teaches you, because like when you have a distilled spirit, like it's more than just taste.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you can smell, right? Mm-hmm. The feel of it, how it affects your palate, affects you, you know, going down your throat, like all of it.
Oh, wow.
And so specifically with the gin, with all the different botanicals, we went through, how many was that during the training?
I don't know. They probably had like the 18 most common botanicals.
Oh, jeez.
And they had
smell and taste.
Isolated them.
Yes. So each individual botanical tastes completely different than when you mix them. But like, so individually we tried them all. And then we tried like a blending that, like we had this whole really in-depth class.
Yeah. That was one of the better classes.
Yeah. It was really something I don't think we could have gotten anywhere else, you know.
Yeah. And then you think about like, how did that affect us here? Mm-hmm. That's one of the things we do on our tours is a little bit of that sensory training.
Oh, neat. Okay.
So
yeah, we did bring that back from
from that course. Mm-hmm.
From Louisville.
That's very neat. So you make your own gin here as well?
Yeah, gin.
Okay.
So gin, you know, vodka gin, rum and bourbon. Gin, I think we were the most excited to make.
For sure.
We probably spent the most time. We did 7 different recipes, 7 trials to come up with our gin. And so I'll just kind of tell you the story on that. Did all 7, distilled them at small. I did a recipe.
I did one.
Amy did a recipe. Our brother-in-law.
Who happened to be with us that day.
Right. He got to do a recipe.
Sure, why not?
And then I've had a very smart guy on consultant since really last year. His name's Steve. He owns Kindred Spirits Consulting. And so that's what he does professionally, is consult with distilleries. He did another 4 recipes for us. And so distilled all 7 of those at small batch, less than a gallon each. Let it sit for a month. We do that with all of our gins to rest it at least a month, just to make sure the botanicals blend and meld really well. And after a month, we all came together and did a blind taste test. Uh-huh. Out of those 7, we picked the top 3. Arbitrary scoring system, but just what did we like?
Yeah.
What didn't we? So pick the top 3. And then with those 3, I went and made 3 cocktails out of each. And so if you're doing the math, yes, it was a 9 cocktail day.
Right.
But someone had to do the work.
Exactly.
R&D day. And so we made a Tom Collins, a gin and tonic, and then a Negroni, which for gin drinks is a really broad spectrum of flavors. And so there was a clear winner after tasting it neat. It was the same clear winner after the cocktails.
Oh, it was a very easy decision.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I wish I could say it was our recipes. It was not. It was actually Steve's, again, one of the 4 that he did.
Yeah.
And it was...
That's also not fair because he had a 4 out of 7 chance.
The odds were in his favor to win that thing.
Right.
He had 4 chances. But the recipe that won was his wife's grandmother's old recipe.
Yeah.
And so he had kind of messed around with the ratios of the ingredients, but the ingredients had kind of remained the same. And he was really excited we picked that, because when we ended up making it for the first time in our 250-gallon still last September, Mm-hmm. It was the first time he'd ever made it at large scale. He'd only ever done like a gallon at a time. Mm-hmm. So he was excited we picked it. And, you know, we share that information on all of our tours. And I was given a tour once and you know, his wife's grandma came to get the tour.
No way.
And she thought, yeah, it was really cool to meet her. She thought I was just kind of giving her a shout out because she was there. I said, no, you get a shout out on every tour.
That's
cool.
So yeah, we give the credit there. And it's a great recipe. People have been really big fans of it. So we're proud of our gin.
Yes.
Those are the stories that I love hearing when I go on tours and everything too, just because it makes the spirits come alive.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
So like you can go in and just get a drink anywhere. So we brought in someone who does the, what's it called? The malting of the malt for beers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he kind of told us like his story and everything too. And I was like, you know what? If I went to a brewery and someone told me that this malt came from Carolinas, right, and was made right here and just kind of given the backstory, I would probably buy that beer a little bit more. So like just knowing where things come from for at least the chance just to taste it and be like, hey, no, that's really neat. That's an awesome story. Let me try that.
Yeah.
So being able to hear those is super special for me. And I'm sure for a lot of people these days is really interesting.
Yeah, I think there's that definitely desire. And that was one of the, you know, when I made that assessment of the industry, hand in hand with the craft distilling movement is that desire for people to know where stuff is coming from. Right. And so, you know, kind of that farm to glass type or grain to glass type concept is we kind of know where everything's coming from. So
that's neat. Well,
that was Please. No, that was a good big contributing factor when we chose our bourbon. Mm. Like that was huge, actually.
Yeah.
It was very important to us because obviously we haven't been in business for 3 years, 4 years.
Yeah. Right. So,
but it was very important to have a bourbon like from day one that we can, you know, have in the bar, have in the distillery, and then work, build off of, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So our bourbon is sourced from a distillery in outside of Charlotte in Statesville called Southern Distilling.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring it here. And then we do a secondary aging on it with sherry infused wood spirals.
That's why I like it so much. I love sherry. I was actually, I don't know.
Were you?
Yeah, it was just on the last podcast. Yep, we were talking about how much I love anything that was rested with anything sherry.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
That's
by far my favorite.
We ended up getting, we went in for a wheat bourbon, but we ended up getting a very mild rye from them.
It's another reason why I like it. It's my two favorite types.
Really?
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, so then we came back and we tried it on 5 different woods. Mm-hmm. We had let it age for 8 weeks, each of them. More trials, you know, hard day.
Hard days at the office.
Someone's got to do the heavy lifting.
Tried it neat. We then made several cocktails with them. And the sherry just held up really well, I think, in that mild rye. And it tasted great. Neat. It held up really well in cocktails.
I've tried a few times.
We ran with it.
So we have... It's always amazing that like North Carolina is just growing and distillers are becoming better and better. It's surprising to me for us being in a podcast and we interview random people when we try different things that I've heard from Southern Distillery multiple times.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We've had them, like we've had some of their whiskey on the podcast once or twice. And I've seen down in Wilmington, they've done a few like barrel picks. Too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, that tells you that you guys... Your palate is amazing because you're finding the best stuff.
Yeah. No. Southern's really gearing up to be a major, I would say, East Coast distributor, really.
Definitely, yeah.
I mean, they're ramping up capability. They're ramping up their storage capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So we visited them just over a year ago, February of last year. At the time, they had 2 rick houses. Each one held about 23,000 barrels.
Wow.
So they already had that aging.
Yeah.
And... we were told then, I don't know where they're at on it now, but we were told at that time they had already laid the cement foundation for 12 more of those rick houses.
Jeez.
So they want the capacity to do, you know, over 500,000 barrels, close to a couple 100,000 anyway. So
yeah,
I think they're really gearing up. They just put this massive 36-inch continuous column still in.
Right.
So yeah, a lot of capacity up there. So we're happy to partner with them.
Yeah.
We will stay partnering with them for the next couple of years. As Amy said, bourbon takes years and years and years to age, so we will have our own bourbon aging. But until then, we wanted to have our flagship, and just to make it unique, that's why we, you know, do our secondary aging on it, just to make it unique to the marketplace.
I love that you guys are doing that too, by the way, because a lot of North Carolina distilleries, I guess you could say, are just taking whatever they have, no matter how young it is, and just throwing it out to the market. And honestly, it's giving North Carolina a bad name for bourbon. And because people try it and they're like, oh my gosh, it's so hot. Well, of course it is because it's young.
Right.
And I think you guys are doing the right thing, saying, hey, you know what? We found the best in the business in the same state as us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're putting our little twist on it. So you have an idea of what's to come from us in the future without just saying, we need to get something out the door. Here you go. Here's the best that we got.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I'm sure the margins aren't as high using someone else's bourbon as it is creating your own.
Yeah, I actually could have saved a lot of money getting bourbon from another state, right?
I'm sure.
And so that was one of the important things. We think it was a great foundation to build on, mm-hmm. but also that connection to North Carolina.
Right.
You know, all the corn that went into that bourbon was grown within 20 miles of Southern Distilling.
Oh, wow.
And so that was really important to tie in, you know, to the state. Is, you know, we were willing to spend a little bit more for that bourbon instead of going somewhere else.
And that's part of the reason why we wanted to ask you guys onto the podcast as well, too. So we are based out of Wilmington, but we wanted to do a whole month focused on Surf City and Topsail Island.
Oh, cool.
Very neat.
And so we talked to Bridger over there talking about building community and everything. And like I talked to her about Hidden Chips before when she actually brought some of your bourbon over for me to try. And I was super excited about that. And well,
let's give them another shout out.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, Bridget and Vic.
I know they're on our menu. They're our new menu's coming out next week. And I have them featured in, obviously, well, they've always been featured in our drinks, but I have their logo on our, so that people know, like, I got the good stuff.
Exactly.
I got the good stuff from Sundial.
Yeah.
And they do our espresso martini and our Irish coffee.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to try that. Sounds good.
Yeah, we love them. They're so supportive, too. Like, as business owners and our friends, like, incredibly supportive of them. Because it's scary entering.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Like, you know, when you open, before you open, it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
But we have nothing but wonderful things to say about pretty much everybody, the small business owners.
Here,
in this area, phenomenal.
That's what we've noticed, too.
Phenomenal. That's huge.
The people can't see it on our camera, too, but what I'm looking at over here is I get to see all of the copper, right?
Yeah.
That's over there. And so hopefully Brittany's taking some good pictures of that for us, too, to throw up on the interwebs for us. But sitting at your bar, which is where I'm looking at over top of there, you get to see all of the copper and all of the stills and everything over there, too. I love that concept of keeping it open to see where what you're drinking came from.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really important. In fact, that what your view right now that you have was always our vision. Amy and I actually recorded a video a year ago for a Kickstarter that we did.
Oh, nice.
But it was still dirt floors in here. And that was a solid wall. But the vision was always about where we're at right now, sitting at the bar, looking through the big glass, seeing the copper stills, seeing all the equipment that goes into it. Right, and if you look even further back, you can just barely see the wood barrels that are aging over there in the rick rack. And so that was always what the vision was for this place. And obviously, we want to tie in the rest of the atmosphere. But you know, I asked my architect, we're in design phase. I said, "Give me the biggest window you can." He said, "19 feet. That's the biggest that the engineer will sign off on." I said, "Great, make it 19
perfect.
Feet." Yeah, that was as big as we could get for that wall.
That's awesome. And then also through that door over there, that's the merch room.
Merch room,
right?
Yep. Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about that and how that was kind of designed and built?
Okay.
Is that your baby?
I mean, yeah. I have to maintain that.
That's awesome.
We have been to several other places
because
we like to drink.
Right.
So different breweries and distilleries and stuff. And one of the things we were advised on, it was Moonshine University. And it was a course on like basically merchandise.
Oh, wow.
And we were like, what? Didn't think that was a big deal and found out it's a big deal that you need to make a little bit of investment in that area and it will pay off. And it has, like, people enjoy like that separate space where you can go in and we can offer more for them. And I've added slowly like other bourbon products and different, in addition to just like t-shirts and stuff that will complement all of our spirits, which is great, you know, because we obviously sell the spirits in there. But I think that separate space has been pretty pivotal for us to be able to maintain like more items and then just like I think a higher quality like stuff for that room, because if it's having our bartenders, you know, having to maintain like that was too much. Like we definitely made that a separate you know what I mean,
a whole different experience.
You can feel a difference between a bar that has like, hey, you can get some merch and a spot like totally separate.
Sure.
Like I feel like it's part of the experience. I can walk in I am a totally, not even gonna lie, I am a brand slut. So like, if you can give me some clothes with your brand name on it, I'm like, I'm gonna rock it.
Nice.
So like 80% of my wardrobe is just like super comfortable clothes. And the other 20% I actually wear out in public. is like some brand that's
same.
Local.
All right, we'll get you a shirt.
Well, all of our friends' stuff, like any bars we go to that we actually like going to,
yeah,
we have clothing from. Just as like I show up, I've been placed, and they're like, "Oh, where's that at?" And I'm like, "I'd love to sell you." Mm-hmm. And I'd much rather support local. Like I love the big classic whiskey brands, but I also want to support people around, because I'd rather you be like, "Hey, just take a day trip and go up to Hidden Ships and Surf City," versus, "Oh yeah, you got to go all the way to the Bourbon Trail."
Right.
Drink some Maker's Mark that like everyone knows about.
There's been a few times that we got some shirts from Woodford Reserve. So we wore that at the very beginning of like the podcast and stuff. And so we've had other people come in. They're like, "I saw you wearing the Woodford shirt, so make sure you wear this now." And I was like, "Deal, I got you on that one." So keeping all the local stuff now.
That's awesome.
So that's kind of how the podcast was built. And it seems like that's kind of how you've been able to grow the community that you have here too. So definitely supporting local as much as possible definitely helps.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I have two Chris questions. One, who
that means random,
logo?
By the way.
Good question.
And then two, what's the difference between bourbon and whiskey?
Okay, good question.
Because you mentioned at the jump, I was like, wait, is it bourbon? Is it whiskey? Right.
Good question. Yeah. It's a good question.
So Amy will take the first one.
The logo was inspired by something I came up with. And it was the negative S in the H. And then we took it over to it was really rudimentary. I took it over to our
branding company. Yeah. Also out of Wilmington, Creature Theory.
Creature Theory out of Wilmington.
They did some work for us early on.
Yeah,
they're phenomenal.
So they're in the cargo district, just like we are.
Yeah, super happy with the work they did with us. They did a brand foundation brief for us, finalized the logo.
Yeah, they gave us three options for the logo. They came up with three designs. This one was the most, I felt like pre-prohibition, geometric. You know, you know what I'm saying? Like early.
Very Gatsby.
Yes, 30s, 20s. Mm-hmm. And I think it just meshed well, because with a name like Hidden Ships, you don't always realize, you come in, you're like, "What? I expected, you know, pirate ships."
Yes.
Right.
But their name is just a nod to Topsail itself. Everything else about it, we kind of wanted to stick with the pre-prohibition era, because our drinks are pre-prohibition
fires.
But that was the logo.
Yeah. Okay. So bourbon versus whiskey. And, you know, I'm sure this podcast in particular has lots of knowledgeable people that drink bourbon and whiskey, so I'll try to make sure I'm accurate on this. But every bourbon is a whiskey, not every whiskey is a bourbon, so we've heard that before. We wanted to go with a bourbon. There's really a couple of big rules to meet that criteria to be called a bourbon. So number one, it's got to be 51% corn in the mash bill. Our mash bill for our bourbon that we have right now is 78% corn, again, grown within 20 miles of Statesville, North Carolina. 14% rye, so it is a mild rye, and then 8% malted barley. So that's our mash bill. So we meet that criteria, over 51%. It's got to be aged in a new American oak barrel. And so we've met that criteria. We have new oak barrels that it gets aged in up there at Southern. The other rules are kind of a little bit more technical, but it says that it has to be put into a barrel at no more than 125 proof. And then the last big rule is has to be bottled at no less than 80 proof.
Okay.
And so I did not know that last part.
It also absolutely has to be made in America.
Right. And the word bourbon is, so a lot of people do think, and if you are from Kentucky, you definitely think that it has to come from Kentucky.
Right. It doesn't.
That's not true.
Right.
But it does have to come from the United States. We protected that word, much like champagne is protected and tequila is protected. Mm-hmm. And so as long as we meet those kind of four big criteria, then you can call it a bourbon.
I did not know the fourth one about being bottled at 80%.
At least 80 proof. And so if you see something that says 79 proof bourbon, they're lying.
Right.
Well, it's a funny question that I ask people, because everyone's like, "This is silly." But we've been doing this for a little bit over 2 years. And I was one of those, like, I Googled it and said, "Well, if it's going to be a bourbon, it has to come from here." And then me and Tyler just get argument. So I always
I like
to ask the people who are in the industry.
Yeah.
Because I'm just a kid who likes it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'd rather ask someone who actually has been educated on that.
Well, I mean, Kentucky's famous for it, and they make good bourbon.
Right. They do. A couple of things go on there. One, it's obviously the water that's like naturally filtered through the limestone.
Right.
But then also the climate, right? And so their rick houses are not climatized through like heating and air. It's natural. And so it gets very cold in the winter there, gets very hot in the summer there. So as those barrels are aging, that's one of the reasons so much good bourbon comes out of, you know, Kentucky. You know, if you look at Statesville, North Carolina, I think we mimic that. Certainly they have that capability to have some cold winters and to have some hot summers. And so similar concept there.
Right. That's the thing that I've always thought was interesting with bourbon in particular, but even whiskey in general, is you could get the same bottle of something, but years apart, it could taste completely different just based on, was it a warmer winter that year or was it a colder winter? And again, probably a novice bourbon drinker wouldn't be able to tell the difference. But so one of Chris's favorite bourbons that are out there is Jefferson's Ocean.
Yeah.
And I tried one and I was not a fan of it. I was like, I'm never drinking this again. Like, this was horrible. And then Chris was like, no, it's really good. I promise. Please try it. Got a completely different bottle years later. And I was like, okay, that one's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So just even with what they do, being out in the ocean and all of that stuff too. But.
It's intriguing. Like, typically everyone, like Tyler said, for the most part, your whiskey's going to taste the same. But in your bourbon, either way, like, it's
especially
just
from those larger distilleries.
Yeah. But that's what I love about the smaller ones is you can truly, like, supporting you guys means that we'll be able to be with you from the get-go. Because, like, some of the larger ones have been around for decades, and so you don't get to taste the old school stuff.
Sure.
And I like to be that guy who's, like, in on the ground floor, like, okay, so
yeah,
it used to taste like this.
And the other thing, too, I want to do a shout-out for anyone who's local that can come and buy your stuff. Make sure you buy a bottle now that you're not going to open, and then buy a bottle, like, the first year that you have your very own. And then that way, too, because, like, those will never be same again.
That's true.
You know, we're trying to maintain, you know, obviously continuity for the flavor profile right now with the stuff we're sourcing. And certainly that's important for the stuff that we'll produce. But even the stuff that we've sourced and done our secondary aging with from Southern, batch one we thought was very, very good. And that was four barrels initially that we dumped and blended and then did that secondary aging. And then we did batch two. That was another four barrels, same mash bill, same everything. Did another 8-week aging. And because it was an older bourbon
that we started with,
it was slight, but I thought it was just better.
Yep.
It just tastes a little bit more mature, which makes sense because it was older. And now we just this past week bottled batch three of bourbon, and it's a little better because it's a little bit older bourbon. And well, I did side-by-side blind taste tests, and it is just it's getting more mature. It's, you know, tastes a little better.
So are you the master distiller back there then?
For sure.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, that's awesome.
I guess I will say this.
Doesn't like to say master.
We don't like to say the word master here. I'm the head distiller.
Okay.
And I actually hired a friend of mine who just also retired from the Marine Corps. And I told him, neither one of us get to use the word master for at least 2 years and at least until we could go into some other distillery and kind of operate it. And so we just use the word head distiller.
Like,
he's a distiller. We're years off from being masters, but that's where, you know, my consultant that I have kept on retainer.
Right.
You know, the first few times we distilled, certainly he was on site with us and I still bring him in. I said, now at this point, really, Steve, I just want you to look over our shoulder. You know, we have lead on it, but you know, just make sure we don't blow up the place. So he's come in, you know, really every time we've distilled to just, you know, kind of be over us. And so, you know, that's been invaluable to me for sure.
That's really neat because a lot of people that we've talked to, not necessarily on the podcast, but just we've toured a lot of places that a lot of the owners aren't distilling their own spirits. Yeah. So I think that's really neat that you're also an owner.
Yeah. I mean, I'm intimately engaged with distilling days for sure. I'm not willing to give that up yet. I'm probably a couple years out. I think as we scale and I think through like where we could be a couple years from now and the guy I hired, I'll give him a shout out, Drew, super happy to have him on the team. But I said, Drew, you know, as we scale, you know, I will take a step back. There will be distilling days that I'm not around for as, you know, as I have to focus on other things. But for now, I'm not willing to not be around for that.
Yeah, I think we're a distillery first.
Okay. Right.
You know, like, and we enjoy the cocktail. And he's picked out the menu. He did a phenomenal job with the menu. And I love it. And I want to run with it and continue to. All my cocktails of the month all are based on, like, older drinks or at least that motto of, like, 3 to 4 ingredients and very fresh and that kind of thing. But that we do promote, like, we are distillery first, so it is about our spirit. So the merch room has our bottles, so like I want you to be able to have a bottle even on Sunday because we can sell on Sunday and things like that. We do want to make
sure. Did you just talk about Sunday bottle sales?
Yeah.
I just want to highlight that for everyone. Oh.
Let's I was going to say,
so, only place in Pender County to buy a bottle.
It is true, yeah.
Really?
That is true.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That's a fantastic thing. I would have a billboard.
I know.
You should get a billboard, right?
But let's get that word out there. Only place in Pender County.
It is true.
So talking about billboards and being in Surf City, and also we had just had a conversation with Brittany and Bridget as well, where it's saying that the town kind of closes down during the winter, but I assume that you guys are not one of those businesses. So with that being said, what does advertising and marketing look like from around this area to kind of promote what you guys are doing out here?
Yeah, so we haven't been open in a summer yet, so I can only base it on like our market research and from other businesses and stuff. But that is like a weekly turnover of new people coming in. So the billboards are actually really important. Yeah. And being in like the magazines that they put out at these cottages that you rent every week, that's pretty important. Like that seems like that would be makes a good sense. Investment. Yeah. But the winter season doesn't slow down as much as it had in the past. So we have a very large local community that, and I'll talk to people out and I didn't even know you were there. So there's still a lot of people that we haven't reached, I think, with our marketing yet. And we're just starting to really kind of get into that more aggressively. And up until now, everything's fairly organic. Like, it's just social media and word of mouth, and which is cool. Like,
which is the best,
really flattering, too. You know, that people are like telling other people about us, which is cool. But then, so our marketing, I think, in the summer is going to look different than it will next winter.
Yeah, I mean, just to comment on that, I mean, I think I'm not sure that our business model would have worked here in Topsail 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because the population probably wasn't where it needed to be for year-round support. There are still a handful of businesses that do actually shut down for, you know, a month and a half, 3 months.
Right.
And I'm not sure they need to anymore. I think they're just used to that.
Yeah.
You know, for us, obviously, we didn't open until September 30th of last year. And so if you think about the seasons here, we essentially opened at the start of the off season, which for us was great, I think, because we were able to build local support, build community. It was also a chance for me to work with the staff, to work through whatever issues we may have.
Right.
You know, we continue to work on that stuff, but it was a chance to gear up for the peak season that we're getting ready to come into. But the locals kept us, you know, they kept the lights on here those last few months, and business has been great. We're excited where we're at. And but we do, you know, Topsail is still considered a tourist town. You know, the last kind of studies they did on it is the estimates are over 100,000 people will visit between Memorial and Labor Day. And so that's a big influx. Yeah, and we hope that, you know, a large number of them come to visit us this summer.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're right.
Especially on a Sunday.
It's really been a word of mouth, because like I heard of you because I have friends who live up here. They were like, oh, hey, I was in, they post pictures and like, oh, I was over here. And I was like, I've never heard of Hidden Ships. Mm-hmm. Like, because I know a lot of places around there. So typically if it opens, I'm going to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I never heard of this spot. And so I was very excited to come out here and just see the place, which leads me to this fun question, because I know you did a lot of research and you've invested a lot in this aesthetic of this place. So what brought you to that concept of like, hey, we want like a classic, like speakeasy, old school vibe?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had a vision, I think, for what we wanted. We did hire an interior designer, again, another Wilmington company.
City Design.
We're City Design.
Oh, yeah. They're fantastic. Yeah.
We're super happy with their during design phase. And we had 3 or 4 meetings with our designer. And I think we gave her a big challenge. We said, hey, you know, speakeasy, but not too dark.
Right.
And, you know, Great Gatsby, but not too much. And don't forget, we're still in a coastal town. So so blend all that together with a little, you know, Great Gatsby and a little, right, all that blended together. And after 3 or 4 meetings, we thought, like, she nailed it in terms of her renditions and her drawings. And so from there, though, you know, Amy and I really kind of took over in terms of implementing that design.
Okay.
So we had her drawings to go off of, but just as an example, you know, above the fireplaces and in the renderings were kind of this regal looking tiger head and lion head.
Right.
And you know, those prints were $900 each. And
we're
so
like,
we didn't really kind of have that budget. And so we decided above the fireplace would be pictures of our dogs. And these were $100 on Etsy. And so we were kind of able to replicate feeling and make our own dogs, which it's funny, but it's kind of a big hit. People talk about it.
Yeah.
And so we took that concept of, okay, now how do we replicate this design and kind of do it? Cause you know, we didn't have $1 million backers,
unfortunately.
This was all done on a budget. And so that's kind of what we had to kind of balance there.
Nice. So you mentioned the Kickstarter, right?
Yeah.
So is that what the honeycomb is over
there? Wall of Fame over there, as we call it. Held the Kickstarter last March. So we only ran it 30 days, March 1st to March 31st. We had multiple levels of support, obviously, you know, t-shirts, hats, glassware, et cetera.
Yeah.
But those two levels we were excited about. We have that kind of center plaque, and that was just $100 to get your name up there. And then the other tiles, which are larger engraved, those were just $250. And Amy talked about local business support. We were really happy to see all the local businesses that took that opportunity to get, you know, free advertising now right, for as long as it's up there for $250, really minimal investment.
Exactly.
In fact, people ask me all the time, how do I get a tile up there still? I said, no, it's closed.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm not selling anymore. and so it's up there. And, you know, one of the other things that did was everyone that contributed both of those levels was invited to our, essentially what became our soft opening. Mm-hmm. We called it a pre-grand opening.
Yeah.
But that was how I planned my soft opening, was they got two tickets to come to that. Nice. So we did that event one day before our grand opening, September 29th.
Squeeze it all in.
Didn't give ourselves a ton of time to
You didn't want
learn.
To do a week or yeah. a couple days?
I mean, you know.
It just,
we wanted to. Do it.
With the calendar and attack. After
everything.
A year and a half of spending money, we needed like, to kind of make some money. So we're like, let's get open.
I don't blame you on that one. So we've talked a lot about the brewery process or the distilling process from start to now. But you mentioned the RV for a year with two kids and a dog. So I kind of want to go back to that real quick too.
Yeah.
What were some of your favorite places that you went and how was it navigating with two kids and a dog?
Wait.
Four kids.
Okay. I was about to say like, I was like, it was more than two kids.
Only four.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You said four. So four in my head, I was like, okay, like two kids plus you two. Yeah. So four kids. Okay.
Four kids. Yeah. Oh, jeez. Plus a dog. Yeah. 40 feet got pretty small after.
I'm sure.
12 months. No, it was great. It was 21. So it was post COVID. It was still like, there were a lot of COVID
a little crazy
restrictions.
COVID.
And our initial plan when Andy retired was to go to Europe.
Okay.
And we were going to tour Europe for like, I think three to 6 months. But we ex-nayed that after COVID.
Right.
And we decided to tour the United States. We put our house up for rent for a year. We bought a 40-foot RV and we never done it. We went tent camping before that. So sure, we've never done anything like this. We're like, oh, okay.
we just did shot.
It. Yeah, we just did it. We hit up 16 national parks that year.
Oh, wow.
Actually, maybe it's 17.
16, I think.
Okay.
Over 30 states. Kind of did the perimeter
states?
Of the U.S.
We did everything but like Kansas and Iowa.
Right.
Basically. The best state.
Yeah.
Just didn't work for
maybe.
Yeah.
The map planning was be up north in the summer, even south in the winter.
Smart.
Yeah, so we went across the north and
the
came down, went across the south in the winter. And it was phenomenal. I mean, Andy and I are, once we retire, we're going to do it again. Sans kids this time, but it was phenomenal. Like, just loved it. We actually took his parents. They got their own RV. When we said we were going to do it, they got their own RV, and we're like, we want to come. We're like, okay.
Me.
And in the military, you know, you don't get an opportunity to be around family.
Right.
Like, ever. So that was, like, one of the first times their kids got to be around
grandparents
their
every
grandparents
day.
Every
oh,
day.
That's
they would
cool,
go outside
yeah.
and go to their little camper and have breakfast cookies every day. Like, they loved it, you know? And his parents loved it, too.
Yeah, it was awesome. Awesome experience. In terms of favorite places, I mean, it's hard to narrow down. We have kind of favorite areas. I think one of them is up in Montana, Glacier National Park.
Oh, I've heard amazing things.
Generally, that region. Of course, Yellowstone was amazing.
Yellowstone, the wildlife was amazing. And then Arizona.
Sedona,
Arizona.
Other region.
And the Redwoods in California were gorgeous. I mean,
did you go to Glacier Distilling while you were
in
there?
We did. Yeah.
My wife went there and brought back a bunch of whiskey for us. And one of our favorite whiskeys is from that area.
Very cool.
Oh, is that right? That's cool.
It's called Bear Proof.
I don't remember the bourbons we drank up there or whiskeys. I do remember their gins. Most of the gins up from that region are very, very juniper forward.
Yep.
Okay.
And that's fine. There's definitely people that love juniper forward. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of talked a little bit about our gin, but our gin, we wanted to kind of dial back the juniper a little bit more. But I just remember that from Montana was like super juniper forward gin.
Surrounded by the pines.
Yeah. I mean, it's all pines up there. And so you want to taste the pine.
I was going to say, you get a full face of like Christmas tree,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, Christmas tree.
So you mentioned, I like to go backwards because that's just how my brain thinks. When creating like your gin, because this has always been a question I have in general, when it comes to flavors in your liquor, like how do you come up with those or like how do you adjust the flavors, especially with gin? Because like you said, a lot of them are going to be juniper forward or like very herbaceous. But the question is, how do you do it?
So the standard for gin is that it must be predominantly juniper berry.
That's 51%.
Okay. It's a little less strict than, say, bourbon that says 51% must be corn. It's a little less strict with gin. It just says predominantly juniper berry. But generally, you think about probably about 50%. For us, because we were the most excited to make gin, we tasted a bunch of gins. We didn't want juniper forward. We also, I think there's a tendency right now, especially amongst craft distilleries, to either go over the top floral or over the top citrus with their gins. Mm-hmm. And again, there's a place for all of that based on what people like to drink. But we were really looking for a balance amongst those things. And so our gin has the one that ended up winning that recipe, as we already talked about, that one ended up having, you know, it has lemon peel, it has orange peel, lemon verbena. There is still some floral notes in there. Mm-hmm. There's elderberry in there, coriander. So there's still some of the traditional botanicals, a little bit of clove.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't so much that we were picking the ingredients to go in our gin. Like I said, we did 7 trials.
Yeah.
And that was the one that won. And so that's, but it met that criteria of taste profile that we had in our minds for what we wanted our gin.
It seemed really balanced. It seemed like the most balanced. It still had a really unique flavor that we enjoyed, but nothing overpowering, and is very, very balanced.
Yeah, for people that haven't tasted it yet, I think it's fairly unique to the market. Not just to say that, but you know, really, I've had trouble comparing it to others.
Yeah.
I think there's one called the Botanist. It's well known.
Yeah.
And that probably comes the closest to what our gin tastes like.
Okay.
I was curious. So like I sit at a bar because it's right down from the studio all the time at the Starling, and they typically do
Starling Crepe Bar. Great cocktails.
And that leads me to another question in a second. So they typically use Sutler's.
What is it called?
Sutler's
gin.
And I think they're based at, they're also in North Carolina.
Okay,
gin.
Cool.
So that's, in my head, I was like, I really hope I have to come and try your gin at some point
today.
I was going to say, yeah, we'll make that work.
Perfect opportunity.
I have a question after Chris's question.
But it's one of those things where I'm like, I love the fact that they're supporting, but I'm trying to figure out like, how can I be like, hey, can you buy some from this spot up the street?
Well, we'll appreciate that support. We actually just started taking special orders through the ABC.
Oh, nice. Great.
So we are now able to fulfill special orders. We have the codes. We'll give you guys the codes. We're not pushing out our bourbon, but our 3 clear spirits is all available now through special order. So now that that's available, you know, obviously the ABCs can get it, but also all the bars and restaurants can request it of their ABC and start getting it shipped to the ABC stores.
Sweet.
Nice.
So my question to kind of go along with that too, I know we're a whiskey podcast. However, when we drink a lot of whiskey, and sometimes my palate gets burnt out with all of the whiskey. So my new kind of love has been enjoying all the new gins that I've been trying, because I didn't realize the huge breadth of what gin can be.
Gin's coming back in a big way.
Yeah.
And so what I typically go to, and this is probably like a cheating way of drinking gin, but is typically a bee's knees.
Bee's knees?
So other than a bee's knees, what should I start putting my gin into that I can get the real flavor of the gin? Because a bee's knees kind of covers it all up.
It does. I enjoy the bee's knees. In fact, I think that's going to be my June drink of the month, because I do like bee's
Spoiler
knees.
Alert. Mm-hmm.
Spoiler right. alert. You heard it here first, guys.
So gin and tonic. And you just, I mean.
True. Yeah.
Probably,
classic. Yeah.
Andy will order a gin and tonic at any bar just because like he'll test out their bartenders. And right. This gin and tonic is just so classic. I like a Tom Collins.
Okay.
And which is really summery, I think. I mean, I'll drink it all year long, but I enjoyed the Tom Collins because it's almost like has a lemon club soda. What do you think for tasting it?
Well, if you're trying to get the essence of different types of gin, then I would say gin and tonic to be able to kind of develop that. You know, tasting gin, I think it's, even for me, it's a bit challenging.
Right.
It's not like a bourbon that you can put neat or, you know, some people do drink gin that way. I think it's less common. I think it's a little tougher, frankly.
Yeah, I've tried that.
And it's my job to do it, and it's still a little tougher to do it. But I think if you're trying to get in the essence of a gin, go gin and tonic.
Okay.
I'll just use the same tonic every time. You know, for us, what I like to turn people on to is one of our cocktails called The Last Word, which I say, you know, only do it if you're up for a gin adventure. It's for people that probably already know they like gin, but just are willing to try something a little different. And so The Last Word is kind of how, when Amy and I go to other bars, we do gauge the bar based on how their last word is.
Yeah, if I can get a good last word, I'm like,
then we know we're in a good bar. Yeah. And so
is that like a standard gin drink then? That like if you say it, everyone's going to know what you're talking about?
Depending on the bar, I wouldn't call it standard. Another, you know, pre-prohibition era cocktail, late 1800s. Okay.
So it has to be a good cocktail bar that probably know what this is.
It's part of our assessment of
it is. Right. Yeah. Like what you use with it.
Yeah.
Matters.
Classic drink though, 4 ingredients, all 3/4 ounce. So gin, maraschino liqueur, lime juice, and then an ingredient called green chartreuse, which by itself can be overpowering.
Yeah.
Very herbally, grassy, but well-balanced. It's just really, really fun how it mixes in that cocktail. And so I like to turn people on to the last word if they're up for a gin adventure.
See,
I'll be getting that next. That sounds good.
Well, we laugh. So like when we first started the podcast, I went on an adventure because I was sitting at the bar with my wife and this lady was just like, ooh, you should try chartreuse. And I'm like, I don't know anything because we had only been drinking. Like, okay. I went from no whiskey, no liquor to a whiskey podcast.
Hey, look at that.
And so yeah. I like,
that's my like flavor, us going from tent camping to RV.
Yes. Like, so my flavor palette went from like, oh, this is horrible to like, just try, like, it's all over the place now. So I can taste a lot of things. Nice. My wife still can't. When it comes to whiskey, she can't with wine. But this lady was like, you should try that chartreuse. And the bar had yellow and green chartreuse. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, sure. And when I think of the word herbaceous, like that is the true.
That defines it pretty well.
Yep.
But you can't, I don't suggest doing just a straight shot of it.
No. I wouldn't either.
Not.
No. I don't think many people would.
That's what you did. Yes. That's what you did. Okay.
We know the bartenders well, too, so they like to haze us sometimes when they get stuff.
That makes more sense.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm like, what? Who recommended
it's like,
that?
Oh, you need to try Malort. Like, those type of people.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yes. Which tells you, I'm not in the industry, but they do haze me enough that you would think sometimes.
Yeah, they got you on that one.
Yeah.
I will say, the fact that if you can get green chartreuse was such a hard thing for a while.
Yeah.
It still is. It's back.
It still is.
It's hit or miss.
Yes. Yeah.
So it is.
Do you guys have some
in the bar?
We do.
We do. I will tell you that I've done side-by-side yellow and green, and I would challenge most palates to pick out the difference between yellow and green in a blind taste test.
Really?
I would.
It's not.
But,
not much of a difference.
I would totally.
If we can't get green, we'll get yellow.
Let's do it. Okay.
Yeah.
Get your last word.
Very, very, very close. You know, again, it's that. Is that herbally, what'd you call it?
Herbaceous.
Yeah, I think that's
he brought
that's the
it
best
up
way.
In a podcast like almost a year ago at this point. And now he tries to use the word as much as possible.
I love it. It's great. It's perfect for chartreuse.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes. I Googled it because it was almost 2 years ago.
Has it? Shoot.
Like
time
flies. We were just messing around with our friend Sean and I was like, herbaceous. Right. And I had to like Google the word. And I was like, we need to find a way to get this in the episode. So
he did it. And okay. Here we are again, 2 years later.
Right.
Nailing it.
It perfectly describes. So like,
it does.
If you say gin, and people are like, they're used to, like my wife is used to cucumber gin. She's like, I can't drink it because I had way too many. And I'm like, but if you properly explain it and tell somebody like, this is what it should taste like, then another chance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to go completely like in a different direction for just a second, only because I was looking at the screen over there. And it mentioned chocolate pairing.
Mm.
Can you tell us about that? And do you do different events like that often?
Yeah, we absolutely do. The chocolate pairing, we started for Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay.
I opened 2 days of it. I'm like, all right. So there's a local chocolatier down the street called Burry Chocolates. Phenomenal chocolate. So I decided, I'm like, I got to pair with them. I came up with this pairing and I consulted with our tour guide. Andy and I, we paired up 3 different cocktails with 3 different kinds.
Another
of,
tough R&D game.
Yeah.
3 different chocolates.
Oh, man.
It was actually 4 because we have one that goes with the bourbon neat.
Yeah.
Anyway,
4 different chocolates.
So, and then I decided to open it up. I'm like, let me open this up for Valentine's Day. It sold out within 24 hours for those two.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, darn.
We had 2 nights initially. Wednesday.
Yeah.
And, so Wednesday this year Valentine's was on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I had,
we don't normally have tours
Thursday.
Wednesday, Thursday. So we said, let's open Wednesday, Thursday. And then it sold out.
Like within 24 hours. I'm like, oh my goodness. And then I had people messaging me like, if there's any cancellations. And I was like, well, maybe I could hold 2 more. So I opened 2 more days. Thursday and Friday. Friday and Saturday. Those sold out within 24 hours as well.
Oh my
goodness. I'm like, okay, people like this. This is good.
Yes.
So I actually have another one coming up the end of March. And I think I'll do it every month. I think I'll keep it going every month because
that's cool.
It was just well received. And it was delicious. I tried it, obviously, myself.
Right.
And you get 3 mini cocktails with it. So you get to taste 4 different chocolates, 1 with neat bourbon, and then 3 with, you know, mini
different
cocktails.
Right.
And then Burry Chocolates is actually going to make chocolates that are infused with our spirits.
Oh.
Oh my gosh.
Should be out in a month or so.
Yeah. Should be next month.
That'll be amazing.
They're phenomenal. They gave us a sample. Yeah. They did a rum and they did a bourbon. And they did a vodka.
Really?
The rum.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Phenomenal. Like phenomenal. So they're gonna work with us on that. I'm so excited.
So there's gonna be in your
We'll sell them here and they'll sell them at their spot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
I don't think we're gonna distribute elsewhere.
I don't think so, but they can. I'm excited to have them in my
I would keep them exclusive. Yeah.
Yeah. So good. So the chocolate pairing, we actually have a charcuterie pairing next week.
Oh, neat.
And we have a local charcuterie owner, and she does boards. She's phenomenal. And the stuffed olive. And she reached out to us about doing a pairing. I'm like, hell yeah.
Right.
You know, let's do it. So we have that going on next week. So the pairings, they go over well. And I don't have to charge that much for it. It's just enough to kind of cover costs and everything. But people like that. It's fun.
That's neat.
Fun.
Yes. So before we get to the end, I want to say, do you guys post on like social media so people will know when you have these pairings?
Yes. Yes. I do post on social media. That's probably my only source. Then it does link, like it goes, shows up on my website too. So if you go to the website, hiddenships.com, it'll show up as there as well. But
talking about the event. Yeah. So yeah. And just to again, highlight it, if they go to our website, hiddenships.com, click on events, these tickets are actually available to buy online.
Oh, okay.
So you can go reserve your spots for all these events. Even for the regular tours that we hold Friday, Saturday, and Sundays.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Pay for those online as well.
Sweet.
And that's only $5. And you get a $5 shot glass, so it's essentially free.
Oh, we just awesome. Okay.
Some accountability with like show up when you sign up kind
exactly,
of thing. But otherwise, we'd like to do those for free.
That's
full
neat.
Free tasting at the end too
yeah.
of all of our spirits. But that's fun. People like that.
We're going to have to sign up for that soon.
Yeah. I'm kind of sad because I typically work Friday, Saturday, Sunday because I'm in retail.
I don't.
And I'm like, yeah, Tyler gets the weekends. So I'm just excited that I got to come up here during the middle of the week. Like it's a little bit calmer.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it's the calm before the storm because everyone's going to get off of work in like an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yep.
And this weather, I'm like, I would that's be up true. Here in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Right around 3:30 is in the off season like this, around 3:30. Yeah. People start to show up.
Yep.
Ready for that nightcap.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
My nap cap.
Nap cap. Yeah. Like
right.
You should make a drink.
I'm just kidding. Let's see what we come up with.
So coming up on the end, but I do have one really great question. Mm-hmm. Where did you come up with what drinks you were putting on your main menu?
Yeah. So, you know, the menu is my baby. For me, you know, after I got out of the Marine Corps, retired, we obviously were traveling around, but it was also really important for me to be a bartender. So, because I hadn't done that before, right? I was in the Marine Corps. And so bartended at a number of different places. And, you know, over that year and a half, 2 year period, what I experienced as a bartender was I really felt like there was an appetite, a desire for people to return to some of the classic cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I think it's pretty common to be able to order an old fashioned. But if you think about even just 10 years ago, like, you never knew what you were going to get.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
And so now I think that trend has continued. People expect to be able to do a Manhattan. And so I just saw as a bartender, this desire to return to some of these classics. And the other thing I witnessed as a bartender that inspired me was I think that for some people, they can be intimidated by the whole process of going up to a bar and ordering a drink. But maybe if they recognize a name that they, you know, maybe had a drink years and years ago and they say, okay, well, I know what a Tom Collins is. I'm going to order a Tom Collins.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That kind of coupled with just me being a history nerd, reading old cocktail books is really how I came up with, okay, we're going to do pre-prohibition inspired cocktails.
Yeah.
And so the reason I say pre-prohibition or inspired by is vodka wasn't very popular until the 1950s. Sure. But we were making a vodka, and so I knew that I needed, you know, some cocktails that had vodka featured. And so if you look at them, they're still inspired by the era, simply made 3 to 4 ingredients. And so that's how those kind of four. The challenge with bourbon and gin, and so just to kind of share with people, obviously they can't see the menu, but we have 4 spirits that we make. So we had a concept of 4 core cocktails per spirit. We didn't want to overwhelm anyone, both the customer and our bartender. So we kind of wanted to focus. 4x4 was the concept.
Yeah.
The challenge with bourbon and gin was getting down to 4.
Yeah. Because
there's so many great classic cocktails that feature those spirits. And then the challenge with vodka and rum was to get to 4. right? Like, which four am I going to go with? And so that's kind of how that came together. You know, if you look at rum, again, we make rum. We're very proud of our rum. We didn't even talk about it here on this podcast, but we like our rum. The one drink we have called a rum fix. Rum fix is a recipe from the late 1800s.
Oh.
The only difference is there was rum fix 1, rum fix 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12. Everyone kind of had their own rum fix from the era. I ended up picking that one. It has pineapple juice in it. It is my only acknowledgement that, yes, we live in a coastal town. I have a drink that's a little bit fruitier.
Yeah, we don't have tiki drinks.
Like tiki, you know, there's other places to get
those. I would say, let someone else do that. Yeah.
Right, and so, but a rum fix, it met the criteria, right? It came from the area, was a chance to feature our rum in it, and gives people an option for something a little bit sweeter. So that's kind of how the menu came about. We don't intend to really change this core. One of the things that was really, really important to me was, again, we're here today because of a great experience that Amy and I had. And so I tell the staff this all the time. Everything we do here is to create a great experience for our customers, but also that experience has to be replicatable.
Right.
And so one of the problems I saw, again, as a bartender was there's a lot of bars that are constantly rotating, and that's cool. And that allows creativity and, and all that stuff. But if we have customers that come in and they have a great experience, and 3 months later, they come in and the menu's completely different and they've told their friends about it. They brought their friends. You can't replicate the experience.
Right.
And so that was really important to me. That's why these core kind of cocktails will not change. But also we have, you know, as we talked about the cocktail of the month, that's our chance to bring in something, you know, a little bit different each and every month.
Yeah.
But it's because Topsail is so tourist driven. We have families that come to Topsail and they've come the same week every summer for the last 20 years. And so our thought was, if we can get them in once, 1 year, we want to have the same experience for them the next year when they come back.
Right.
That's a good point.
I love that.
That is a completely different mindset. You guys kind of have to get yourself in, right?
Right.
It is like dealing with the tourists that come in versus dealing with like the same 20 people that always come in.
Yeah. I mean, we have regulars that I guess eventually they could get bored of our menu, but I'll tell you what, we sell an awful lot of smoked old fashions. I don't think they're going out of style.
Probably not. And at that point, they're coming in for you anyway, not necessarily like, oh, I'm bored of this drink.
Right.
Like they're coming in and talk to you guys or coming to talk to the bartenders. Sure.
So in your old fashion, do you muddle or
we
not?
We don't muddle.
Okay.
We thought about muddling the sugar cubes.
Which is classic.
I believe muddling fruit is sacrilege for that particular cocktail. I know, again, that might get some hate. But we were never going to muddle fruit. I did think about muddling the sugar cubes, but just for efficiency's sake, and we still, again, are interested in speed of service. We make a house Demerara syrup. We use Demerara instead of white sugar just because it's a little bit more rich.
Yep.
So much better, too.
Yeah.
So
we agree with that.
Sure. Kind of mouthfeel and all that stuff. And so we use a Demerara syrup in our old fashions.
Nice.
But we don't muddle any fruit.
Okay. I just did a podcast with a different group of people yesterday, and don't hate me for even trying it because we all know this is against all of the rules, but they muddle all of their fruit and then they also shake the bourbon with the ice.
And
they don't claim to be a whiskey bar or anything like that. He's like, the only reason why we do it and we put it on the menu, we show it on the menu just to show that it's different.
Sure.
And they do it just for like the shock factor. People are like, why are you doing that? Let me try it.
It would shock me as well.
Yeah. It's like, I need to try it because no one does that.
That's true.
And so that's what they were hoping to do with that. And I was like,
that's
interesting.
Fair. I mean, again, different philosophies that we just kind of have our guiding principles of.
Yeah, you know, I like
if
it.
If they didn't do it in 1890, we're probably not doing it.
Yeah, that's
right,
true.
Right.
So if you're looking for a piece of history, you can come here. This is how they did it 100 years ago. And if it was still popular over 100 years, probably
there's a reason why.
Yeah.
Exactly. I only asked that question because I'm friends in like the real world, besides just sitting at a bar and saying I'm friends with the bartender. And like my one friend, I'm like, this is how you make an old fashioned. I'm like, typically, you don't, like you can muddle, you don't have to, but I mean, I'm expecting to do some Demerara syrup, some bitters, some bourbon, just stir it up. And she's like, no, you put the orange and the cherry in the bottom and you like muddle it. And I'm like, it does make it, I will say, it'll make it more approachable for people because it's
for
way
a non-whiskey
more,
drinker.
Yeah, for
I suppose,
people who don't drink whiskey, it's sweeter
for sure,
and it's softer. Like so, you to me, I'm like, but I just paid all this money for a good whiskey. Like, I can't taste the whiskey.
Right.
But for like a novice whiskey drinker, sure. Like, or if they're using like an Old Crow or like Barton or something that isn't like as high flavor profile, like, it's an easy way to drink it.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's all okay, and there's a spot for that. You look at Old Fashioned and some of the history there. The original recipe calls for spirits, bitters, sugar, and water. Water is one of the essential ingredients, and you get that through dilution and stirring.
Yeah.
And so, again, that's how we try to keep it, the muddling of the fruit off.
Yeah. Hard time with it, because Old Fashioned, like, it got its name because people were going crazy with drinks, adding different things and. The reason it's named Old Fashioned is because someone said, I just want it the Old Fashioned way.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. So I have a really hard time with anybody that messes with the Old Fashioned and calls it like, you know, maple Old Fashioned or anything. Like, I personally, like, I can't do it. Like, I just can't do it. I've tried them. I'm out and about other places. I've tried them, but I can't bring myself to do it here. Yeah. Because it's like, that's the reason it's called Old Fashioned. Say, yeah. You know, like,
there was a woman that was in the industry in Wilmington. She had a podcast for a little bit too, but what she would go into was the history of why there is different names for different drinks.
Yes.
And when I first heard the Old Fashioned, I was like, that's interesting, because a lot of people kind of, I don't want to, that's a better way. I was going to say desecrate it. But like, it's not really an Old Fashioned if it's not Old Fashioned.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a different drink now.
Yes.
But yeah.
I have issues with that.
So
I do try them, though, if I'm out and about and there's somebody's like, exactly. I'll try it. But
market research.
Yeah, I mean, you know, why not? All right.
Right.
Which leads me to one of my last questions for you guys is, what does success look like for you? Because in my head, I'm like, okay, so like market research, you might open up a different bar, use your same whiskeys, but like have a different theme. But I'm not in your head. So that's why I'm curious is like what it would look like.
Yeah, I think success is customers having a great experience first and foremost.
Yeah.
I don't know about branching out. Some of our, I won't even call them goals yet, just maybe dreams or vision of what maybe year 4 and 5 looks like. Looks like a larger capacity. So if we had the opportunity to build our own Rick House, that would kind of be part of the expansion for us. The business model, though, for us has really always been about distribution. And
right.
So there's a finite number of people that can never fit in a bar. And so I did not show growth, that much growth year to year in the bar. Mm-hmm. Where I showed growth at year 3, 4, and 5 was through distribution. Mm-hmm. We're going to focus the first 5 years just really getting a good foothold in the state of North Carolina. I won't look for out-of-state distribution until probably year 5.
Right.
Until we make sure that we're at a place that we have the capacity to produce the demand for that out-of-state distribution. And so that's what I think success looks like for us is, you know, building distribution over time. It doesn't do any good for us to sell a bunch of bottles and for them to sit on a shelf, either at a bar restaurant or at the ABC. And so that's why we come back to the bar and create a great experience, give them a great tour. They buy a shirt, maybe a bottle on Sundays. They come out here and they have a great cocktail. Now they have that experience. And if they're back at their local ABC store, they see our bottle. Now maybe they're more likely to pick it up because they can still. So the bar is very, very important.
Right.
Certainly early on, it drives a lot of our sales.
Sure.
But the model for long-term success is distribution.
Yeah.
For sure.
So since Chris had you looking forward, I'm going to have you take a look back real quick. So if you could tell your younger self one thing, what would it be?
This is for both of you.
Right.
What a great question. And
how far back? Give us a...
Yeah.
Give us how far back?
Younger self. So it could be you in high school. It could be you 10 years into Marine Corps, or it could just be like.
Just 10 years ago.
6 years ago. Like, I don't know.
What do you got?
I wish I had a canned answer for this. I don't.
That's why we ask it, because we don't want the same answers on all podcasts or different radio stations. We want to be different.
I never answered that one. I
know, I don't know what I would say, because like everything that we've done up until now, you know, when you're 21 and you start drinking.
Yep.
clearly your palate is completely different.
Absolutely.
You know, you're all up fuzzy navel.
Yep.
Like that's expected. When you grow, it grows.
And we were just talking about Rumplemint shots. So understood. Okay. Yeah.
So everything has happened exactly how it's supposed to happen to lead us to this Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know what I would.
I think that's a perfect thing to say. Yeah. It all leads up to this.
I mean, it really would. Because 21 years Marine Corps had given us, it was frustrating towards the end because we want to be doing something else.
Sure.
But also it gave us what we needed, I think, for a lot in a lot of different areas. And he was an officer. So it was a big deal because now he runs this operation. Like that was pivotal. You know, I'm a nurse. It has nothing to do with drinking. Although at the end of my shift, I wanted to drink. But other than that,
I'm sure that helps a lot, and especially with the success looking forward to this, is like we've talked about this on the podcast before, and especially with a lot of our friends, anyone who's in the military is used to their SOPs, right? And every other civilian in the world doesn't even know what the word S or the initial SOP stands for, let alone have their own to the success of life. So those standard operating procedures are very important. So I think that's something amazing that's helping.
You know, certainly, as I think Amy just mentioned, I was an operations officer towards the latter part of my career. If you think back to what I was doing last year, getting this place up and running, I felt like an OPSO again.
I'm sure.
I had different staff departments, the architect and the interior designer.
I was so grateful for
the general
Andy.
Contractor.
I'm like, how are you keeping track of all these things?
Getting all of them to play nice together was a challenge, but I was set up for success, you know, from my time in the Marine Corps. But even now, like one of the things that's important to me is, you know, we talk to the staff about expectations. We talk to them about standards. Talking about SOPs, like the spec sheets for all the cocktails are right behind the bar. And so everyone could just jump in and make the drinks. But even like, you know, we have staff that get, you know, what I call billet descriptions and like, here's the standards. Here's kind of the expectation. So certainly that's played a role in hopefully what will be our success here.
Nice. That's great.
So where can people figure out, learn more about you guys as a brand? Like what's your handle on social media? And shout out your tours again, because not everyone's as boring as I am. That's the word.
Well, actually, we are going to open up our tours in the summer as we get closer to the summertime here. We're going to start opening up during the week. And we'll have them, like, people that roll into town on vacation obviously want to come, especially on a rainy day, and roll in and do a tour at 1 a.m. or 1 a.m. 1 p.m.
Not 1 a.m.
Yeah. Just after
we will
lunch.
Not be here.
Yeah. It's just getting up here. 1 p.m. They want to roll in at, like, the early afternoon, and we're going to have that available because, like, I think that's a cool experience to be able to do something. And it definitely gives you, like you said, the background of a drink or a spirit absolutely enhances somehow that spirit or that cocktail.
Yep.
So after the tour, you have a drink, you got, like, you have more understanding of that spirit or that cocktail, and you're just more excited about it. It just enhances that experience.
Yeah.
So we'll have that for sure this summer, probably by May. We'll end up doing.
I think so. Probably right around Memorial Day. Yeah. Okay. Able to make a decision on where to expand.
But there's a demand for it, so I'm sure we're going to.
Yeah, sure.
We're learning.
You asked about socials, though. Did you give our?
I mean, we're on
platforms.
We're on Facebook and Instagram. Those are like
the two main.
Yeah. Yep. And then our website designer just opened up a brand new website for us. She's launched it.
Nice.
It's phenomenal. She did such a great job, courtesy of, by the way, if you want her, she's phenomenal.
And it's just hiddenships.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hiddenships.com.
We bought like 15 different URLs last year.
Right.
Most of the time when you pick a name, it's, you know, xyzdistillery.com. Mm-hmm. And one of the indicators that Hidden Ships was the right name is that just straight up hiddenships.com
was
available.
That's fantastic. Really? That was available. Yeah.
I know.
I bought Hidden Ships Distillery
just in case,
and it just reroutes. But the fact that it was available was a good sign to us.
Yeah.
So,
my issue is spelling distillery.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can spell some days, but like when I'm typing in on my phone and my phone is like, you missed an L or it adds an L. Like, it's like, if you don't have to spell it, Hidden Ships is just so easy.
It is a little easier,
Kept it easy.
Yep.
Try to make it easy.
Nice. So I really just want to say thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys. Appreciate you coming here.
It was a blast.
Super fun.
I love the vibe. Mm-hmm. We'll definitely be up here. My friends literally live like in the neighborhood up the street.
Perfect.
So we'll have to come up here before the summer. Hopefully I'll get a day off and can come see you guys. And I'm excited to see the tour and just kind of see the growth that you guys have.
Thank you. Yeah, we're so happy that you guys came to us. This is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for letting us take over for a small pit of diamonds inside of here. So I appreciate
it. I know,
it's
wonderful.
It's great.
Thank you
yesterday
so much.
We were slammed by this time, so this was a good slow Thursday.
That's
been, right?
Well, Thank you guys for listening to the podcast. As per usual, check us out on all the social medias. Like, comment, share, subscribe.
Especially on YouTube right now. We're trying to build a YouTube.
Yes. So hit the subscribe button on YouTube and Spotify, Apple Podcasts. It definitely helps us out so we can grow and do more amazing episodes on location like this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll catch you guys in the next one.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Thanks.